Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Ezell versus the City of Chicago.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Alan Gurr for the appellants. The Second Amendment plainly protects the right to access gun ranges. It is odd to suggest that people have a right to possess firearms, but not the right to practice their use. What else would someone do with a gun if not take it to the range for target practice? Additionally, as the Fourth Circuit held in Edwards versus City of Goldsboro, there is no gun exception to the First Amendment. Gun training is speech. The First Amendment does not protect the firing of guns as such, no more than it protects driving a car. But driver's education is speech, and so is the course of instruction mandated by the City of Chicago to obtain a gun license.
Is the claim right to obtain a gun license and practice, if it's to obtain a gun license and practice shooting, where is the irreparable harm in this record? The plaintiffs have, or they can certainly easily obtain licenses. Then they can go to Morton Grove, if they want, a few hundred times a year to practice. And, you know, that sounds like plenty of practice, you know, to someone like me.
The irreparable...
If they are eventually compensated for travel, where's the harm? I mean, this situation really seems very well suited to money damages. You know, Morton Grove, if you live, let us say, in Rogers Park, is a lot closer than Bell Street, South Bell Street.
Your Honor, irreparable harm comes from the fact that when the government increases the cost of engaging in constitutional rights, when it imposes burdens upon people's access to constitutional rights, including by telling them
the access, as I just noted, is closer on the one hand than it is on the other. So what's this access?
We could say the same thing about bookstores. And as this court found very recently in Annex Books, where the law at issue was one that restricted the hours of bookstores, the court accepted without any sort of second-guessing.
Yeah, well, books and guns. There seems to be a rather, you know, I'd call it cantaloupes and rutabagas, not apples and oranges.
Well, the Supreme Court has rejected the idea that because the Second Amendment protects guns, it is entitled to any less respect as a fundamental right. The fact
that's
is...
That's not a matter of less respect of a fundamental right.
People cannot be told...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. People cannot be told in Chicago that if they want to visit their church of choice or their bookstore of choice or perhaps an abortion clinic, then they can go take that over the border and go somewhere else. The fact is that when you have the right to engage in activity which is protected by an enumerated provision of the Bill of Rights, the government cannot tell you to take it somewhere else. And and this court has accepted in Annex Books that when you frustrate people's access to bookstores, in that case, the court will assume that that there will be less of it available, that there will be fewer people who are able to engage in First Amendment activity, and therefore that's irreparable harm. The irreparable harm in not having training is that people can be shot and killed.
You seem to concede that some regulation of gun ranges is allowable.
Yes.
Because as I recall in your reply brief, you said that gun ranges, you know, may be regulated.
Yes.
In the interest of public safety. What are the public safety issues as you see them? In other words, what kind of regulation is allowable under the standards that you suggest we use to review the laws that impinge on these so-called core Second Amendment rights?
Okay. First of all, Your Honor is correct. We are not saying that gun ranges are beyond the police power. Obviously, gun ranges can be regulated within constitutional standards, and those standards are such that address any potential secondary effects of a gun range. For example, a gun range is a business. If it's going to have visitors coming and going, there might be parking demands placed upon a community. So we can zone it for its impact on parking and traffic, the same way that people zone bookstores and churches and abortion clinics for those kinds of concerns. It may be that The government can require certain noise abatement standards that might be imposed.
Well,
the government can
I'm sorry.
You know, the government can suggest that the range be inspected to make sure that the backstop is effective, so that bullets aren't flying anywhere. I mean, there are things.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to get at is this: what exactly is the scope of the injunction that you seek? In other words, do you seriously want to park one of these 18-wheel portable gun ranges in one of the most crime-ridden and desperate neighborhoods in the city of Chicago? Because, you know, for me, I'm only speaking for me right now, that sort of request really doesn't help you with the balance of harms for a preliminary injunction.
Actually, Your Honor, I would posit that a crime-ridden neighborhood is the best place to offer people training in the use of their, of guns for self-defense. The people in these neighborhoods are the ones who are most likely to need firearms in their lives to defend against home invasions and other problems that they have in their communities. The gun range itself, let's talk about what this range is and what it does. Nobody can...
Your brief doesn't tell me enough about that?
Well, I believe it does, but I'm able to expand upon that. Nobody can work at one of these ranges, can be a trainer, unless they are a police-certified trainer. That's a provision of the city code that we're not challenging. We're not inviting criminals and gang members to play with firearms.
Now, we're sure are inviting a pretty ignorant guy to run the thing, according to the briefs.
I don't believe that he's ignorant at all. This is somebody who's...
he's never had any experience with any of this. He's not...
That's not true, Your Honor. Respectfully, the person who's operating the gun range is in the business of providing gun range facilities to primarily police departments, although he's worked with civilians as well. This is an application of gun ranges which is often used by law enforcement.
Okay, so he's not a state-certified firearms instruction. He would, but had not yet set safety protocols. He has never written protocols for a mobile range. Seeing one in person, or before the preliminary injunction hearing, talked to anyone who had operated a mobile range. He had not discussed the particular of Blue Line's mobile range with Blue Line, and he thinks it'll take 15 minutes to prepare a safety plan once he sees the truck.
Okay, I believe we're talking here about Richard Pearson,
yes,
who's the executive director of the Illinois State Rifle Association. I apologize. Earlier I thought you were speaking about the gentleman who actually operates the gun range. The range is operated by a person who's in the business of operating gun ranges, and he's done it for a long time safely with no problems. Richard Pearson is going to be in charge of getting those ISRA members and friends who are state-certified police instructors to work at the range and provide instruction. The people who will work at the range will fully comply with Chicago's laws governing who can do the training.
Okay, so SAF's director of operations does not know what laws apply to operate a range.
The certified Illinois state police instructors will know how to operate a range because they've been certified by the state police board to do that. And Chicago requires that they work there, and that's who we would provide. In any event, if the city wants to regulate the zoning or location of mobile ranges or any other kind of ranges, it's free to do so, and we'd be very happy to we would welcome an actual regulatory effort as opposed to a complete prohibition, which is plainly overbroad.
Even to the extent of safety regulations. You're not talking about just, you know, density and noise and parking and the usual domain of zoning codes, but you're talking about appropriate safety regulations as well.
That's correct. If the city enacts safety regulations and those regulations are not... unconstitutional in some way, if they plainly relate to safety as measured by whatever appropriate standard review we might have, then those would be perfectly fine. We have no problem with that idea of regulation.
Does the city involve themselves in any existing ranges in government facilities?
It sure does, Your Honor. The city has, as the record notes, the city operates a variety of ranges. The police have five ranges throughout the city in all the neighborhoods. Other governmental departments have ranges. There's a range at the top of the Federal Reserve Bank that was recently built by our client, Action Target.
These are all enclosed firing ranges. We're not talking about any open air firing ranges.
That's correct. They are primarily enclosed. In this climate, open air ranges have limited utility. Our client, ISRA, has an open air range. It's typically closed in the winter.
And typically, federal courthouses have firing ranges.
I have not been able to verify this. However, I have been told.
I can verify it for you. The design guide, U.S. Course Design Guide, provides for it through the Marshal Service.
Okay. In that event, obviously.
Ask Judge Kane, because I can't. Where ours is.
Okay. Well, obviously,
I can't do it.
It's probably my chambers.
How many publicly available firing ranges were there before this ordinance was adopted? Those that were available and open to the public, as opposed to law enforcement or private security agencies?
It's been some time. Mr. Brown, the plaintiff, has testified in his declaration, which is in the record, that he used a variety of ranges within the city of Chicago, and he's provided the street addresses that he recalls. Those have not been around for some time. I'm not sure when the last one closed up. That's a function of the market because, of course, Chicago has banned the most popular form of firearms to the public, and so obviously the demand for range time was reduced by that. So I'm not sure when they last went away, but it's important to note that Chicago's law, until less than a year ago, allowed for gun ranges. The prohibition on discharging firearms had an exception for anyone who fires a gun at a duly licensed gun range.
I'd like to step back from the specifics of the proposed mobile range that so occupied the district court, at least in part, on this case, and really focus on how this claim is properly conceptualized, because the nature of the harm in question, and therefore whether it's irreparable or not, and then the balance of harms, doesn't come into focus unless we properly conceptualize the claim. And as I understand this, this is a pre-enforcement facial challenge to the firing range ban when it's coupled with the mandate that to get a handgun permit or any gun permit, any Chicagoan must have live fire range training. And so in that sense, the harm has nothing to do with traveling outside the city to comply with the requirements of the mandate. It really has to do with the right to possess the firearm in the first place, because it's a permit requirement. It's a condition on licensure. And when the harm is framed in that way, the case looks a lot different than it did to the district court, it seems to me. Is that a fair conceptualization of your claim?
That's a fair way to conceptualize a part of the claim. Our first claim is, first and foremost, because people have the right to access a gun range, even if they've already been licensed by the city. They've done it once every 3 years, but let's suppose they want to go on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. They still have the right to engage in this activity. So it is a facial challenge to a prohibition on constitutionally protected activity. And the harm is that people are not able to maintain their proficiency, because when you're not proficient with the use of arms, bad things can happen, as Chicago itself recognizes, which is why they mandate it in the first place.
Right, and your position is that the absolute ban on live firing ranges in the city of Chicago is a per se violation of the Second Amendment, or a categorical violation, not subject to either strict scrutiny or intermediate scrutiny. You'd take strict scrutiny if you had to, or maybe even intermediate scrutiny, but your claim is that this is the categorical violation.
That's our first claim. The second claim does get into standards of review. The second claim is the one that examines the law as a condition of exercising the right to possess firearms. And at that point, it's a condition that would fail any standard of review. But you're right. Our first claim, Your Honor, is simply that people have the right to access gun ranges for obvious reasons. It's a constitutional right. And even though gun ranges can be regulated, they can be zoned, you can treat them under the police power, you simply, just like D.C. could not ban all functional firearms, the city of Chicago cannot ban all gun ranges. The Supreme Court showed us in Heller that when a law attacks a core aspect of the Second Amendment, it's going to be struck down. There's no need to go further. I'm in my rebuttal time.
Well, just one follow-up on that. And as a consequence of that understanding of the claim, the application facts really make no difference here. Whether somebody can travel outside the city to obtain training or to use a live firing range outside the city really doesn't matter. The specific application facts of this proposed mobile range really doesn't matter. You're seeking an injunction against this requirement as a facial matter.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The city would then have to go back to square one and attempting to regulate.
That's correct, Your Honor. The mobile range is a remedy that we proposed, but we're not seeking a claim limited to that specific remedy. The claim is broader.
I know you're in your rebuttal, but I have a question.
I'm sorry?
All right.
I'll give you some additional time.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Do you concede that the district court never ruled on your request for a permanent injunction?
I concede that the district court
ruled. Here comes a lawyerly answer.
No. The specific answer is that we requested that it be treated as such, and the district court declined to treat the matter as one for a permanent injunction because the district court asserted that there was insufficient notice to the other side.
So in other words, the only order on review is the denial of the preliminary injunction.
I believe the court's jurisdiction would extend to other orders that are inherent within that hearing. We believe that there's nothing left to be done here. We've had 13 depositions. We've had essentially a trial. We've had briefs upon briefs upon briefs. There's no point in, since we have essentially a question of law, a pure question of law, I'm not sure what else there is to be done here. Either our claim is sound under the Constitution or it's
not.
Where's
our abuse of discretion on refusing to rule on the permanent injunction?
I believe, Your Honor, it's not a there's no prejudice to the other side by taking the same issue and saying there has to be a stop at some point. We've litigated this thing to death, literally.
Well, you know, what bothered me was when I looked at your jurisdictional statement, what it said was that the court denied plaintiff's motion for preliminary and permanent injunctive relief. And she never denied a motion for permanent injunction.
We did ask for that relief, and we were told in so many words that we weren't going to get it. So
then why would you ever claim in your jurisdictional statement that she denied both?
You
didn't rule on one.
Well, we certainly came out of there without it, and we asked for it, and we were told that it wasn't going to be forthcoming. The way I construe the order, we were asking for a permanent injunction as well as a preliminary injunction, and we came out with less than nothing.
We've got to be careful about the way we
absolutely
style things.
Absolutely. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
May it please the Court. I'd like to start with the crucial, some decisive, I think, factual findings that the district court made, which was that there are 14 gun ranges that are within 50 miles of Chicago. There are actually 15 if you add the Morton Grove range, which is
undisputed. Why is that relevant to the constitutional question?
It's relevant for two reasons in this case. First, it's relevant for the preliminary. This is a preliminary injunction case. The district court didn't rule on a permanent injunction. The district court specifically said in so many words, I'm not ruling on that. And for the preliminary injunction standard, it's black-letter law that you need irreparable harm and inadequate remedy at law.
Your position misconceptualizes the nature of the injury here and misconceptualizes the claim, as did the district court in this case. The claim doesn't have anything to do with the travel injury. It has to do with the encumbrance on the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms.
Yeah, but that claim, with all respect, that claim has not, there's been no permanent injunction in this case.
I understand that. We're at the preliminary injunction stage. But the nature of the harm for purposes of the determination of irreparable harm and the balance of harms for purposes of the injunction inquiry is not the travel. That's just a complete red herring here. The nature of the harm is the burden that this ordinance places on the right to bear arms, on the Second Amendment right.
Well, Mr. Gura conceded that there can be regulations of gun ranges.
Yes, and we're not talking about regulations. This is a ban. The city has simultaneously mandated live fire training as a condition of licensure and prohibited it. And how can that be permissible and not a burden of a very significant sort on the Second Amendment right?
I would disagree with that. I disagree that the city has done that. What the city has said is you need to obtain a 1 hour of live fire training in order to obtain a firearms permit in Chicago. It didn't say, if it had said, you have to obtain that in Chicago and
no,
then
that's
ban firing.
That's irrelevant to the constitutional inquiry. It mandates the training and simultaneously prohibits it. And it doesn't matter if the training is available outside of the jurisdiction of Chicago. Chicago doesn't have any jurisdiction to regulate outside its city limits.
No, but Chicago, for example, it would have jurisdiction, although it would be cause a serious constitutional problem to say you have to obtain the training in Chicago. What it's done is it said we have an interest
in... It has prohibited Chicagoans from obtaining the training where they live. Extrapolate this to the First Amendment context. Let's say the city council, for example, decided that it was subjected to too much negative coverage by bloggers and talk radio hosts, not to mention the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. And so it decided in its infinite wisdom to impose a license requirement on all journalists, new media and old media. And as a condition of that license, the city decided to impose a training requirement for all bloggers and talk radio hosts and reporters at the Trib and the Sun-Times, training in responsible journalism, responsible objective journalism. And yet, at the same time, the ordinance imposing this license requirement prohibited any such training program inside the city. Now, would it be an argument to say that it doesn't matter for constitutional purposes because there's a very fine journalism school just over the city limits in Evanston, and anybody in the city of Chicago can go and get responsible journalism training at Northwestern University, a very fine journalism school, in order to comply with that licensing requirement? How could you possibly stand there and make an argument with a straight face that that would be constitutional?
I think it's a little bit hard to make that analogy for several reasons. And one reason is that it's very difficult to imagine a First Amendment, that the First Amendment would allow you to have a licensing requirement for journalists
that
in the
all
first
that
place.
All that so does is go to the nature and the strength of the city's interest. It doesn't go to the harm that's alleged here.
No, I believe it does. And also, I think that there should be, I would make 2 points. One is, I don't think, and the city believes that there is not a direct Second Amendment right to operate a gun range or to use a gun range. At most, that's something incidental to the ability to exercise the Second Amendment
evidence
right.
What evidence show that there is problems with gun ranges?
I beg your pardon?
What evidence do you have or did you present to the district judge that there is a problem in operating firing ranges?
This was the district court found that that the evidence showed that there were about four problems. One problem is the risk of stray bullets, which was a risk that Mr. Gore himself referred to.
For indoor ranges?
I beg your pardon?
For indoor ranges.
They have to be constructed correctly, or there can be a risk of stray bullets. That's what the district court found.
What evidence did you have that occurs?
This was I have to say, this was a preliminary injunction hearing,
yeah,
and the city did not.
Discovery
but there
did,
was.
What additional discovery does the city need before the court can rule on the merits?
I'm not sure about what discovery, but the city had planned and is planning to introduce experts concerning the risks of firearm ranges throughout the country. And
those
that's
are,
what
counsel, those are regulatory concerns. This is a prohibition. This is an absolute ban. The concerns that you have identified in the record, such as it is at the moment, are simply regulatory matters about how these ranges should be operated and constructed. It has nothing to do with what you've asserted here, which is the right to prohibit. This ordinance is prohibitory. It's not regulatory. And that's a huge difference for Second Amendment purposes.
I don't believe it is. You know, there are a couple of other points I wanted to make. One is banning discharges of firearms in highly densely populated urban areas.
We're not talking about open-air discharges. We're talking about discharges in a properly constructed and properly supervised and maintained indoor shooting range.
Yeah,
that's the scope of what we've got here.
We brought before the court, I don't know, 15, 13, 16 different ordinances from around the time of the founding, where cities, as they became urbanized, banned the discharge of weapons. Now, those cities perhaps...
That's the open discharge that Judge Sykes was just talking about, not firing ranges.
I think that open discharge, including firing ranges...
No, those founding era sources and ordinances and statutes don't have anything to do with firing ranges.
On their face,
they simply don't have anything to do with firing ranges, and they establish no more than this is an appropriate area for regulation, but not prohibition.
I would respectfully disagree with you. This was something that each city, as it became populated in the early years, for the people who knew what the Second Amendment was about or what their state constitutional analogs were about, passed these ordinances, and these ordinances restricted the discharge of weapons, including several of them that specifically talked about firing at targets. Now, it is whether it's outdoors or indoors,
those ordinances that specifically focused on firing at targets required certain distances to be maintained. They didn't prohibit it outright, and that's what this is.
Look, Mr. Feldman, I think my brother and sister are trying to get to is this. What they're trying to understand is how can the city condition gun ownership on live range practice and then ban all live ranges. Now, you will probably have some real problems when this reaches the merits, which of course it has not. Is the city taking any steps to define regulations for gun ranges?
I'm not aware of specific steps that they're taking because the city believes that that at the time of the Second Amendment, it was understood that jurisdictions had essentially plenary authority to regulate the discharge of firearms. And the City Council knew when it enacted this statute, the City Council had heard evidence that there were numerous firing ranges that were located around Chicago, as the district court found. Some of them are right on the borders of Chicago.
So your position is that those founding era statutes and ordinances establish that this activity is categorically outside of the Second Amendment and is unprotected as an initial matter.
I think what it establishes is that at the time of the Second Amendment, it was understood that bans on firing ranges and requiring people in cities, in densely populated urban areas, to go farther out to suburban and rural areas if they wanted to discharge their weapons was something that was understood to completely coexist peacefully with the Second Amendment at the time of the founding.
Well, your historical source material just doesn't establish that proposition. It establishes no more than this is an appropriate area for regulation, but not complete prohibition. Those ordinances and statutes all pertain to firing in streets and taverns and other, you know, open air kinds of discharges of firearms, not a properly regulated firing range indoors and subject to safety
even
controls.
Even in those days, I would think before you could conclude that, you'd have to conclude that somebody said in those days, well, wait a minute, there's no way to have in Philadelphia or in Baltimore or in Boston a open-air firing range that could be safe, and so you don't really have the right city.
What about a closed firing range?
Or closed firing ranges in those days, but the point is cities felt free to just do that.
What the dangers are for a closed firing range operated by under regulation by trained personnel.
What the district court found was there's the risk of stray bullets, which I already mentioned. There's
risk of stray bullets. What's that mean?
That means that if the firing range is not correctly constructed, bullets can get out and could cause injury to people who are around.
Argument for strict safety standards in the construction of the firing range, not any argument in support of a complete ban.
How can you ban something just because of that?
It's not just because of that. That was the first of four.
What other dangers are there?
Okay, the other risks were that if people gather with guns, as they're likely to do around firing ranges.
Have you been to a firing range, an indoor firing range?
I haven't personally, no.
My guess is, from the reading of these briefs, a lot of people that prepared this stuff have never been to a firing range.
Sergeant Bartoli, who was the former range master of the Chicago Police Department, testified. And what he said was that people inevitably congregate with guns. One of the risks is that when people congregate with guns, things that might be just casual disagreements or fights can end up in causing injury and harm.
Police ranges were casual disagreements and fights?
No, they are. The police ranges are very strictly governed by the city of Chicago itself. They have complete control over those ranges.
And you can mandate that.
And they're not open to the public, and they're not open to just anybody who comes in, but only to police officers. And in addition, that having a firing range open to the public where people are known together with guns can be attractive to criminals.
I suppose the city could say you can only have so many people present at a particular time with so many lanes of fire.
Yeah, but that,
you could regulate it.
It is possible that the city could put stringent enough regulations on this to alleviate some of these harms. But I don't think that that's the question in the case. The question in this case.
You want to make it entirely safe, so you ban it altogether.
There's a historical practice that permitted cities not to decide, well, we have to put aside some area, or there's some areas of the city we can do it, and
so
other areas where we can't.
Your primary concern, and to be sure that everybody's safe, no firing ranges.
In the city, where it is known, I would add the qualification.
Why would that not be the case anyplace?
No, where it is known, because...
Just because the city doesn't have jurisdiction.
It's not because the city doesn't have jurisdiction. Well, there is...
You would ban it outside the city if you had jurisdiction to do so, right?
I don't believe Chicago would. What Chicago, the city council heard testimony was that there are firing ranges that are located all around the city of Chicago and that are easily accessible.
If you had a chance to close them, you would.
I don't believe that the city would. But what the founding era history shows is that cities didn't have to decide, well, let's find an area where we can set aside for target practice. They said discharge of weapons is something that has always been subject to really plenary authority of local governments to ban them, so long as there are opportunities for people to go elsewhere, not in the densely populated urban area, to practice their
firearms. Well, there are parts of the city of Chicago, even the city of Chicago, which is not densely populated.
It's the third biggest city in the country, I believe, still.
Like forest preserves?
I'm not aware of... I don't know about forest preserves in the city. I'm not sure whether it would be possible to put a gun range in a forest preserve. That's not what the...
Industrial districts, manufacturing districts... There are all kinds of different zoning uses that would be compatible with a live firing range properly regulated.
Your Honor, the city is not required to try to find the least restrictive alternative, even in the First Amendment.
The city is required to not suppress gun rights. And this mandate as a condition of licensure to keep a firearm in your home, of that the license requires live fire range training, coupled with the live fire range ban in the city, it suppresses gun rights.
I believe that for the reasons I said before, I think that the Chicago ordinance recognizes that people can go outside the city of Chicago at what the district court called minimal inconvenience and obtain their live fire training.
You're misconceiving the injury here. The injury is not the travel. The injury is the suppression of the gun right.
And I would say that the gun right that the Supreme Court recognized in Heller was a right to possess guns for purposes of self-defense. This is, at most, it's an ancillary, incidental effect on that
right. It's not ancillary. The city has made it mandatory for any Chicagoan who wants to have a gun legally in his or her home. He or she has to comply with this requirement, and it can't be obtained where Chicagoans live.
I don't know
how the city thinks that that's even rational, much less survive strict scrutiny or an intermediate standard of review.
I'd offer with some caution. caution because I don't think the analogy to First Amendment rights actually holds with Second Amendment. But the analogy I would give you is the Renton case. In the Renton case, the city zoned adult sexually oriented movie theaters, I think it was. They zoned them out of basically out of the city. There was, I think, 4 or 5% of the city's territory which was still open, and that was commercially unfeasible for them. And the Supreme Court did not say, and we're talking about a direct infringement on a First Amendment right, and the Supreme Court did not say the city has to find the least restrictive alternative way to do that. What the Supreme Court said, if it's supported by the secondary effects that these things can have, the city doesn't have to try to find the one place in the city or find the least restrictive way of dealing with the problem. It can do that. Now, having said that, I think it is also a mistake to conceptualize the Second Amendment the same as the First Amendment or the Fourth or the Fifth or any of the other amendments. Each of them has a scope that is appropriate to their own.
Yeah, the Supreme Court said in Heller that First Amendment analogies are appropriate, and that the Second Amendment should operate the way the First Amendment does, in that it takes certain government power off the table.
It does take
government power to ban lawful uses. And it seems to me that when you condition the lawful use, the lawful exercise of the Second Amendment right on a licensing requirement that is completely unavailable and indeed prohibited in the city, that's not within the city's power to do, that's just a straight-up act of suppression of gun rights.
That's only if the right to go to a firing range is something that itself is a direct Second Amendment
right. And we've established that we disagree on that because the founding-era sources that you've cited don't establish the city's power to ban indoor firing ranges. They establish that the city has the right to regulate.
It's not just the founding era regulations. It's the Renton case, which I just showed, even in the First Amendment context. But there also is a long history of regulation under the Second Amendment that's different from under the First Amendment and that establishes that cities do have very substantial power to regulate gun rights. And here, as I said, we believe that it's just an incidental to a right, but even if it weren't incidental to a right, all they've done is put a minor inconvenience on the right.
How can you claim that the live fire range training is so critical to licensing and yet claim it's not fundamental, it's not within the scope of the right? Those are mutually contradictory positions. The city takes the position that live fire range training is critical to the safe operation of a firearm and indeed critical to licensing, and yet the city is also maintaining here at this podium that live fire range training falls outside the scope of the Second Amendment right. Those are two mutually inconsistent positions.
It has a relationship to the Second Amendment right, and that's why that is the relationship that Your Honor suggested. But I don't, and it is important for the Second Amendment right, and that's why the city's required it.
But I take it that we are here on nothing more than a preliminary denial of a preliminary injunction. Correct?
That's correct.
And that the merits can and should be put aside for another day.
That's also correct. Although we believe we would succeed in the likelihood of success on the merits, the district court specifically.
But say that again.
We believe that we should succeed on likelihood of success on the merits, but in any event, that can be put off. The question here is really only the irreparable harm that would occur between now and the time of permanent injunction.
But there's been a substantial legal error made by both your conceptualization of this claim and the district court's, and that's grounds for reversal. If the district court made legal errors, and if there are legal flaws in the city's argument, and there are many, we've identified many of them here today, then that's grounds for reversal and for the issuance of a preliminary injunction subject to full consideration of the merits.
Your Honor, the district court, first of all, at page 190 of the transcript is where it didn't rule on the permanent injunction.
So I'm aware of that. I'm not quarreling with you on that.
Right.
I'm making a different point, which is to say that the entire preliminary hearing determination or preliminary injunction determination was premised on legal errors about the nature of the harm that's being asserted here and the nature of the right and what the scope of the right is and the nature of the burden of this statutory scheme is.
I don't believe it is. And Mr. Gura, I would add, did not ask for an injunction against the licensing requirement or ask for an injunction requiring that people be allowed to obtain licenses without the live fire training. The injunction he sought was to require the city to provide live fire training. And both the founding era precedent and the consistent course of Second Amendment and firearms rights understanding in this country ever since, the Second Amendment itself talks about a well-regulated militia and recognizes the need for regulation. This court itself in the Squain case, in Williams, and in Yancey has recognized that people under the Second Amendment can be deprived entirely of their Second Amendment rights, something that I'd add in the First Amendment would be just inconceivable, perhaps for the rest of their lives. The Second Amendment right is a right that's separate from the others and it has its own requirements, and it's always recognized the need to coexist between regulation by cities and by governmental agencies and the basic right to keep and bear arms. And in this case, what the city's done is people have the right to keep and bear arms for purposes of self-defense, and they can obtain the training they need to do that with minimal inconvenience. And for those reasons, I think that the city's the district court acted correctly in denying the preliminary injunction. And if there's other issues, they can be addressed they can be addressed where there's a permanent injunction on the merits.
You're out of time, but I'll give you a couple more minutes. Two more minutes.
I just would want to emphasize for your honors that the Second Amendment right always has been subject to kinds of regulation that are extensive and that can have always coexisted comfortably with the First Amendment. Not only for the reasons I've said, but the state courts and state law has had 200 years experience with dealing with what the scope of the Second Amendment is, based on some of them on Second Amendment cases and some of them based on their own state constitutional analogs, which the Supreme Court in Heller and in McDonald found were persuasive.
Did you find ordinances in other municipalities that outlaw, ban firing ranges?
I'm not aware of any presently, but as I said, we found in the early years of this country.
No, I meant current ones that numerous. Do what Chicago did.
I can't cite any to you right now. The state constitution, state courts have always recognized that, so that what the standard for the Second Amendment is, so long as you have an effective right to possess arms for purposes of your self-defense, that government regulation essentially is constitutional, so long as it doesn't render inoperable or render nugatory that effective right. The Chicago's ordinance recognizes the right to possess arms for purposes of self-defense, and that's the only right.
You have on the one hand this and on the other hand that. You have on the one hand, you can certainly have a weapon, but to have that weapon, you've got to have training at a firing range, and we don't allow firing ranges.
Right, but as I said, the firing ranges are readily available very close to Chicago, and so long as the basic right to possess arms for self-defense.
Would you have a bigger problem if the gun ranges were in,
Milwaukee.
What's your hometown?
Milwaukee.
Yeah, what's your hometown?
In Indiana, Rensselaer.
Rensselaer, Indiana.
I think the farther away they are, there would maybe be a more plausible case. But I also don't think that it's likely. The city council knew that there were firing ranges very close to Chicago, and I don't think it's likely or plausible, really, that any time in the next decade there's going to be severe restrictions on these firing ranges that are actually very close to Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Phil. We'll give you 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I hope not to take even that long.
Mr. Gura, what do you want your injunction to say?
That the city, well, we actually proposed an injunction, and the language we proposed we think is fine, that the city's prohibition on the operation of gun ranges, that specific code provision is enjoined, as well as the application of any other law, because Chicago keeps finding new laws in its books, many laws that have nothing to do with guns at all, that they imagine somehow operate to prohibit gun ranges, just that Chicago cannot apply any other law creatively to invoke against the operation of a gun range.
Well, as for the last part of that, that's a little too vague to satisfy the standard for an injunction, which has to be highly specific. You're asking that this gun range ban be enjoined.
Then I would suggest one specific thing, which is the point that they raised in response to our litigation. And that is that the city may not apply its zoning code as a prohibition against the operation of gun ranges. And this is important because we don't have a problem if they want to zone for gun ranges. But the city's taken the position that because the zoning code does not explicitly authorize gun ranges, they are forbidden. There's no such thing as private property in the city of Chicago. They don't believe in that. And unless they allow you to do something with your property, you may not.
They don't believe it.
Well, they don't. That's
what does that mean, for God's sake?
It means that we had testimony.
So I don't own my apartment?
It means that you may not build an apartment on your land or occupy a single-family home unless they've specifically authorized that use for your land. That was their testimony.
Well, then they believe in private property. I can do it if it's zoned.
If they eliminate all the traditional uses of your property, the Supreme Court has held that once that bundle of property rights is extinguished, it's a taking.
You know, I've heard hyperbole, but this is just ridiculous.
No, actually, Your Honor, I'm respectfully, we had the testimony of the zoning.
It takes a lot to get me angry.
We've had the testimony of the zoning commissioner, Patty Scudiero, who testified quite explicitly that the failure to list gun ranges as an authorized use of property means that it's prohibited, that whatever is not authorized.
Right. I saw that in the record, but Are you saying that a special use permit is unavailable? I thought most zoning codes, indeed, I think they have to satisfy due process, have to have an escape hatch, which is to say either a variance procedure or a special use permit procedure to create exceptions.
The way that Ms. Scudiero described the zoning code is not available. The way she and the testimony is in the record, and I would, of course, defer to what her actual words in explaining how she believes the zoning code operates. But the first thing she posited is that if it's not listed as a permitted use, it cannot occur. And then you can list these things as being subject to a variance or a special exception. And if she would allow for this to occur, if she were rewriting the zoning code, then she would list gun ranges as a special use or variance situation within limited districts. But right now, the testimony flatly was, it is not permitted, therefore it's forbidden. That is not consistent with the city of Renton analysis, and I'm very happy that my colleague, Mr. Feldman, raised Renton, because Renton does not allow municipalities to effectively deny individuals a reasonable opportunity to operate adult bookstores. Moreover, even to impose restrictions upon adult establishments, one must first identify some kind of secondary effect that triggers the police power. And here we have absolutely no secondary effect of indoor gun ranges that's been identified by the city, other than what essentially amounts to their objection to gun ranges being operable.
They haven't had their discovery on that.
They have had the ability to assert their arguments for what the reasoning is for justifying the prohibition of gun ranges. And they've offered several reasons. And none of those reasons listed anything that sounds like an appropriate secondary effect. For example, one of the reasons that they offered was people who go to gun ranges might be robbed. This court has disposed of a thieves' veto of fundamental constitutional rights. That was done twice within the last 2 years here. So that's not a valid concern. They have an objection to people firing guns en masse. Well, that simply describes what happens at a gun range. That's not a secondary effect of a gun range, such as crime, pollution, what have you. Those would be secondary effects. They have not offered an actual rationale. And it's not surprising they have not offered a rationale, because the city council invoked rational basis and the city's attorney invoked rational basis when this was considered. The city's corporation council testified that you may do whatever you think is reasonable. That's in the record. And then, without any findings, without any kind of thought process, they went ahead and they banned all gun ranges. And then the district court applied rational basis, essentially, because the district court told us that even intermediate scrutiny would not be applied, and clearly strict scrutiny did not apply. So I think we have to deduce from that there was a rational basis analysis here, a post hoc rationalization for this law. And this is simply not something that the Second Amendment can tolerate.
Well, as I understand your position, it is that the legitimate governmental concerns that apply in this domain can be addressed by an appropriate zoning regime, and you don't object to that.
That's correct, Your Honor. We have no objection to a legitimate zoning regime that complies with Renton standards. We have no objection to any kind of safety regulation that addresses actual safety concerns in a way that's tailored to meeting them. And we await the city's decision to regulate in this fashion. And if this is all they had done, we may never have been here. There might never have been a lawsuit. I would add real quickly, Your Honors, in closing, Your Honor mentioned that Heller indicated that the First Amendment framework applies in the Second Amendment context. Actually, the Third and Fourth Circuits have both now explicitly made that holding. The Fourth Circuit in Chester, the Third Circuit in Marzarella. In fact, in the Fourth Circuit, it was over a dissent, still said the First Amendment framework is the one that we're going to apply. So it's not just the Supreme Court. And then, of course, to address the other concern that the court raised, indeed, we do have testimony on the record that Ms. Scudiero has never been to a gun range, does not know what happens in gun ranges, and actually testified as to what she imagines occurs at gun ranges. And so this is all actually based upon the imagination of somebody who does not know the subject matter, not really an appropriate invocation of the police power.
Got one of those. They cancel each other out. Tell me something. Is there you'd be willing to go to any neighborhood in Chicago, is that correct? Any?
Unless there was some reason not to.
Well, okay. So like the Gold Coast, where houses are millions, you'd be willing to put your 18-wheeler up in the Gold Coast, even though the little piece of land would cost you $1 million.
Although the 18-wheeler may not be an appropriate, may not be appropriately located in the Gold Coast, there are gun ranges that would be appropriate there.
That's not my question. In other words, you're willing to go to any neighborhood, regardless of the cost. I'm talking about cost here.
The client would have to evaluate the cost as to whether or not they want to rent property in the Gold Coast neighborhood to park a truck at. I haven't spoken with my client about the Gold Coast neighborhood. I would imagine that's probably cost prohibitive at that point. However,
do you understand what I'm getting to?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if you could be more clear, because
they can set zoning standards as they set zoning standards. What if they set the zoning standards so that you're in Lakeview? Of course, you're from Virginia. You don't know what I'm talking about.
I've been to Chicago so frequently lately.
Lakeview, Gold Coast.
There are neighborhoods where it's not appropriate to park an 18-wheeler to operate a gun range. And there are neighborhoods like the ones that we've identified where you have acres of abandoned parking, abandoned factories, essentially.
So
where
you're the ones that will choose the zoning requirements.
Because the city refuses to do so. If the city wants to zone it, we'll take a look. And suppose, if they want to zone and say you can have the truck in an industrial neighborhood, that's probably going to be okay. I can't bind my client to that, but we need to see what the zoning looks like before we can say whether or not it's appropriate or not. But I will say this about the Gold Coast. There are probably people who live in that neighborhood who would not mind hiring my client to construct a private range inside their home. That does happen in America. There's record evidence of that. And so if somebody, if an individual living there wanted to say, I want a range just like you put at the Federal Reserve Bank in my penthouse, then that'll be an interesting.
You wouldn't be adverse to prohibiting any mobile ranges as long as you had the ability to develop indoor or outdoor, for that matter, but indoor ranges. In other words, your whole argument isn't based on the fact that you have a mobile shooting range.
That's right. That's right, Your Honor.
And you do understand that in the Gold Coast, in those houses that you're talking about, the people that would like the range are people who at this very moment are trying to decide between divorce and murder.
Well, if somebody is fierce for their lives, they should definitely be able to access a firearm and know how to use it in the event that a violent former spouse might be coming for them.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Case will be taken under advisement.